what we want to see, what we'd like to see, is the Taliban return to the peace process in a credible way.
But the Pentagon spokesman says it might not be so easy. This is Thursday, the 1st of July, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Coming your way, Kim Jong-un says a grave incident has taken place in his country. China is malaria-free. One Sherpa shares with those on Everest. COVID could end some standardized school tests. Yoga in New York City's Times Square. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The Pentagon confirms the United States will leave a number of troops that is much larger than a typical security detail to guard its embassy in Kabul, along with American forces at the Kabul airport to help protect the vital facility for a time. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby also told reporters Tuesday that the violence in Afghanistan is too high as the Taliban push to claim more districts around the country.
As we see events on the ground unfold, it certainly calls into question the sincerity of their efforts to be a legitimate, credible participant in the peace process. That's really the right future for Afghanistan, as a political process that leads to a negotiated settlement and a peaceful end to the fighting in Afghanistan. And that's what we're in favor of. That's what the administration's policy continues to try to pursue.
Earlier Tuesday, the United States top general in Afghanistan, Austin S. Miller, called the rapid loss of districts to the Taliban worrisome.
When you start looking at actions on the battlefield, many reasons for that. As we talked about, it's something to be concerned about. It's something to pay attention to, and adjustments have to be made as you lose districts, because districts start representing key terrain as it relates to security of the people, security of the provincial capitals.
The Pentagon has vowed to continue financially aiding the Afghan military, along with providing over-the-horizon advising and aircraft maintenance support. NATO has said it will continue training Afghan forces in a location outside of Afghanistan. The Pentagon would not confirm reports about the specific number of troops that will stay after the withdrawal is complete. The Associated Press reported last week that roughly 650 U.S. troops are expected to remain in Afghanistan to provide security for diplomats after the withdrawal, which is set to be largely completed in a couple of weeks. Since May 1st, when the withdrawal began, the Taliban have doubled the number of districts they control, according to the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy's Long War Journal. The Taliban have grabbed hold of more than 80 districts in the past 2 months for a total of 157 Taliban-controlled districts. Meanwhile, Germany and Italy have removed their last remaining soldiers from Afghanistan, ending almost two decades of deployment to the war-torn country alongside the U.S. and other coalition troops. Germany announced its military withdrawal without much fanfare shortly after the last 250 German soldiers were airlifted Tuesday night out of their base in northern Afghanistan. For more information on our top stories, head on over to voanews.com or any of our many digital platforms. These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. Myanmar's army rulers threaten those who call them junta. Tokyo may extend coronavirus curbs into the period of the Olympics. India says U.S. social media giants must obey its laws. The Indonesian airline Garuda started administering free coronavirus vaccinations to holidaymakers and travelers on Wednesday. Seoul using AI to detect and prevent suicide attempts on bridges. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says a grave incident has threatened his country's coronavirus prevention efforts. It is a rare admission by Pyongyang, which claims to be free of COVID-19. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
At a meeting in Pyongyang, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un scolded senior officials for unspecified carelessness related to the pandemic. He said the situation has caused a grave incident that poses a huge crisis to the safety of the nation. State media provided no details about the incident or how it posed a threat. North Korea continues to insist it has found zero cases of COVID-19. It's not clear whether Wednesday's admission reflects any wider change in approach toward the virus, or if it was a pretext for other plans. State media said several senior officials were replaced during the Politburo meeting. Some analysts say it may have been an excuse for a leadership purge.
최근 당 전원회의에서
Yong Moo-jin, a Seoul-based North Korea expert, says he expects North Korea's lockdown to continue long after other countries declare the pandemic over. That is in part because North Korea has rejected international efforts to provide COVID-19 vaccines. North Korea has been in a severe lockdown since January 2020. An outbreak in North Korea could be extremely dangerous because many parts of the country are impoverished and lack an adequate health care system. In a report last week, the World Health Organization said North Korea claimed it had conducted more than 31,000 COVID-19 tests, all of which, it says, came back negative. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, the World Bank raised its forecast of China's economic growth this year to 8.5% from 8.1% and said that a full recovery requires progress in vaccinations against the coronavirus. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are very happy you have chosen to join us here on VOA Asia. The World Health Organization has certified that China, the most populous country in the world, is malaria-free. Lisa Schlein has more for VOA from Geneva.
It has taken China 7 decades to reach this milestone. The country has gone from 30 million cases of malaria in the 1940s to 0 cases today. Director of the World Health Organization's Global Malaria Program, Pedro Alonso, tells VOA the achievement should act as an inspiration to other malaria endemic countries around the world.
That China, that at one point had 30 million cases of malaria every year, and that would place that country among the top two burden countries in the world, can actually drive down malaria and get rid of this scourge of mankind.
China is the first country in the WHO Western Pacific region to be awarded a malaria-free certification in more than 3 decades. Other countries in the region that have achieved that status include Australia, Singapore, and Brunei. Globally, 40 countries and territories have been declared malaria-free. The most recent include El Salvador, Algeria, Argentina, Paraguay, and Uzbekistan. Eliminating malaria is a long, complex process involving many factors. Alonso says economic development, improvement in people's living conditions, and the implementation of measures aimed at preventing, controlling, and treating malaria are critical for success.
Vector control, mostly through insecticide-treated bed nets, will, for the years to come, remain the backbone of our prevention efforts. Artemisinin in combination therapies will remain the backbone of our treatment efforts.
The WHO estimates there are still 229 million new cases of malaria annually, leading to more than 400,000 deaths. Africa is home to 94% of those cases and deaths. Alonso says the mosquito in Africa is very effective in the transmission of malaria. This, he says, is one of the many reasons why it is particularly challenging to rid the continent of the disease.
And of course, all of this is compounded by lack of economic and social development, difficulties in communication, poverty, housing, lack of electricity. So it's a compounded effect. It's where China was 60 years ago, and where we're having a lot of difficulty even to maintain the gains achieved over the last 20 years.
While substantial progress in the prevention and control of malaria is possible with today's available tools, Alonso says only a highly effective vaccine can eradicate the disease. The WHO malaria chief says he is cautiously optimistic that such a vaccine is on the horizon. He notes a pilot project to develop the world's first malaria vaccine, RTS,S, in three countries in sub-Saharan Africa, has been shown to provide partial protection against malaria in young children. He says the vaccine, which was introduced in 2019, is likely not to be the hoped-for game changer everyone seeks, but he adds it is a very good start. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Bangladesh is deploying army troops to enforce a strict lockdown amid a record spike in coronavirus cases. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Mellon. Just cancel it, reads the T-shirt slogan. These T-shirts are the work of designer Susumu Kitutaki, the owner of the P&M shirt store in Tokyo. He says demand has boomed. Kitutaki says the Tokyo Games Organizing Committee demanded he stop the production of his earlier anti-Olympic T-shirts over copyright concerns. He started over with a new design that includes fewer Olympic rings and a misspelling of Tokyo as Okyo. Kitutaki says the sales spike reflects public resentment against a prolonged state of emergency issued by the government.
When the state of emergency was issued in January, everyone had to stay home and be patient. Since then, I think the frustration has increased, which has led to people to question, why are we holding the Olympics?
T-shirts, drawings, and other artwork have become a form of protest over the decision to hold the games against medical advice and the public's opposition. Officials have responded in some cases by demanding the sometimes satiric art and merchandise be removed. The artists say their freedoms are being curtailed. The scenic Himalayan mountain trails that normally draw throngs of foreign trekkers to Nepal have been empty for more than a year now, with most of the country's tourism industry still shut down by the coronavirus pandemic. That means tens of thousands of Sherpa guides have been left without the work they depend on to feed their families. Angfurpa Sherpa has been trying to help those struggling the most and hopes to inspire others to do the same. Sherpa has been loading his truck with sacks of rice, lentils, cooking oil, and other staples he's bought with his own money, and delivering the goods to dozens of families in Kathmandu. Nepal normally has two trekking seasons each year, spring and autumn, when the majority of foreigners come to hike the trails that cut through the country's snow-capped peaks. about 171,000 visitors went trekking in 2019, spending days hiking, eating in cafes, staying in inns, and buying gear and equipment. In 2020, and again this year, there were hardly any. Sherpa guide Ang Furpa Sherpa.
Trekking guides have not had any work since 2020, and all the treks we had organized were canceled. Guides are facing lots of trouble, and they are in pain, and I can feel their suffering.
As well as helping his fellow guide, Sherpa has been taking rations to a shelter caring for 57 disabled children. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman. Making headlines in Asia, Hong Kong's UK flight ban leaves students stranded, parents in despair. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now in VOA Asia, even before the COVID pandemic shutdown, some colleges had announced that they would no longer consider standardized tests like the SAT or the ACT for admission. But as Anush Abatisyan reports, COVID may have permanently altered the role these tests play in student admissions.
One of the casualties of the pandemic were standardized college admission tests like the SAT, and it appears that's not going to change anytime soon. Earlier this year, the College Board, which administers college admission tests, announced the SAT will be either postponed until 2022 or cancelled. These tests have been a rite of passage and necessary part of the college admissions process. Educators consider them a clear-cut way to assess a student's level of academic preparedness. Hafiz Lakhani runs a company that helps students prepare for college entrance exams.
The difficulty of earning an A can be very different from one school to another. So this is where the standardized part of standardized tests is quite important. With those same students from very different high schools, we can look at an apples-to-apples comparison of their problem-solving ability based on a score result on the SAT or ACT.
But for years, education experts like Akhil Bello from the National Center for Fair and Open Testing have been criticizing standardized tests, saying they do not judge students fairly, favoring students who are good test takers and more financially well off.
To a certain extent, you could think of test preparation as steroids for standardized testing. So the more you use standardized testing, the more you advantage those with the money to pay for standardized test prep. It also excludes various demographic groups depending on the education they received.
Anais Chubukyan spent her final 2 years in high school preparing for standardized tests. Her parents hired tutors, which cost them $3,000.
It's more of like a strategic test. If you know how to like approach the questions, it's easier. That's what the tutors taught me. They taught you like how to take it.
In response to the decision to postpone standardized tests like the SAT, over 1,500 U.S. colleges and universities made them non-compulsory. That policy will remain in place until the fall of 2022 in most U.S. universities, including Ivy League schools. Adil Luva Fatukasi, a former high schooler in Washington, D.C., was among those who decided to skip the standardized test. She was admitted into the University of Pennsylvania.
I was advised to just take the test optional, option four, my more selective colleges.
Critics of standardized tests are encouraging universities to have test-blind policy.
Some colleges, which is a much more clear policy, the University of California system, St. Mary's in Texas, have announced that they will not look at test scores at all. So if you submit them, they're not considering them. And I think that policy is a very clear policy, asking students to focus on their academics in school and their personal interests.
Anais and Adil Luva got into the schools they wanted, but while their future looks bright, the future of college admissions tests remains unclear. Anusha Vitisyan, VOA News, Washington.
We continue on VOA Asia. As Thailand's government prepares to celebrate its reopening to foreign tourists this week, many businesses on the holiday island of Phuket are not so enthusiastic about the return of visitors. Soraya Ali reports.
Thailand's idyllic resort island of Phuket is set to reopen, but it's not good news for everyone. The Phuket Sandbox Initiative will allow free movement on the island from July 1st for fully vaccinated tourists with no self-isolation on arrival. But some business owners say the initiative won't do much to help them, given the low number of tourists expected to trickle in. This spa, for example, has more than 300 massage rooms, which have been closed since the global health crisis began. Manager Natchakanya Sangwang Wong says they need more than 1,000 customers to open.
Our spa is a big-sized business, so we couldn't reopen because it will require the cost of utilities, staff and rent.
Thailand lost about $50 billion in tourism revenue last year when foreign arrivals plunged by 83%. Phuket was hit particularly hard by job losses and business closures. The island's director of tourism, Sang San Tong Tan, is not convinced this initiative will do much good.
What's going to happen? We open the Phuket sandbox in the 1st of July. The tourists will come and see nothing. You see like the building on sale, building for rent, the shop closed, the convenience store closed, Starbucks closed also, you know that, right? And you think it's a good environment for the tourists? No.
Thailand had an average of 3.3 million monthly arrivals in 2019. The government hopes the Phuket sandbox will draw at least 129,000 visitors to the country in the third quarter. Some hotel managers, like Kamonrat Thut Pi Mai, remain optimistic.
I'm so excited about the reopening. I have been missing moments during holidays, like during Christmas time, when because of the lights, it was really lively. Among the staff, we are hoping those moments will return.
That was Reuters correspondent Soraya Ali. Solstice yoga returned to New York City's Times Square in 2021 after being suspended last year because of the pandemic. The all-day event brought together over 2,000 enthusiasts with their yoga mats to the very heart of Times Square. Evgeny Maslov filed this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
A yoga mat, a bottle of water, and a good mood. That's all one needs to meditate in the heart of a busy metropolis. And this was the case in June 2021, when Summer Solstice Yoga returned to New York City after the coronavirus pandemic forced a break in 2020. From 7 in the morning till 10 at night, dozens of classes took place right on New York's Times Square. Anyone willing could book a place online. This year, over 2,500 people showed up and placed their mats, socially distanced, on the city's hot streets.
The theme for the summer solstice in Times Square is always, you know, it's easy to find tranquility on a mountaintop. It's not easy to find it in the heart of Times Square.
Before the pandemic, over 10,000 people came to Times Square to celebrate the summer solstice on a yoga mat. Douglas Stewart, co-founder of Yoga in Times Square, still remembers how 19 years ago, when the program just started, only three people showed up.
There's always a curiosity about that, about how can you practice in this craziness, and I think that's the major draw. But then over the years, people have grown accustomed, and it's become sort of a tradition. You see people showing up year after year after year and bringing their families and their friends.
These yoga classes are for both yoga novices and seasoned yogis. Every hour, a new instructor comes in, but the program stays the same.
I've come previous years, and obviously with everything that's happened, it's very different this year. The city itself is different, but the event is really great. The instructors are great. I'm really thankful that I came. I came from DC, so it was worth coming to.
I'm doing every day almost inside my home. So sometimes I want to take outside to take a breeze to doing a yoga. especially this big city in Times Square is like a very great opportunity to like join a yoga class in today. Yeah, so I decided to come today. Yeah.
The yoga summer solstice here at Times Square looks very different from the huge crowds and buzz of New Year's Eve. And the contrast is especially evident this year. Some needed tranquility after the disturbing reality of the past 15 months. For Evgeny Maslov in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Doug Bernard, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Enjoy the day ahead.